This episode has big people language and themes that may be disturbing to listeners. Use your discretion before continuing.
And this is not politically correct, but you know what? People have called me pardon me for the language. People have called me a bitch, like she's such a bitch. And I'm like, you can call me anything, but don't ever call me a stupid bitch.
I'm Binder Sudgen, and you're listening to Lady at the Ledge. You did a thing this week. How are you feeling about it all?
It's pretty cathartic, to be honest with you. I've been, I've had two children, so I feel like it was a heavy labor. And I feel like I'm rebirthed in many ways. It's the new me. I feel invigorated. I feel excited. It's just a really, really amazing feeling. I have a lot of affirmation coming from many people in the province, which really makes me feel validated for the decision that I've made. So yeah, I'm feeling very, very reassured that I did the right thing.
So I just want to talk about your experience at the legislature. I mean, you detailed a number of traumas that you experienced in your life. I'll leave it to you to share what you like in this podcast, but how did that inform the policy that you brought forward as a minister?
Well, I mean, I grew up, for your listeners, I grew up in Skeena Projects in East Vancouver with a single mom. I'm First Nations. I'm Niska, Gitxsan, Cree, Ojibwe, French, and Scottish. My mom left my dad because of domestic violence. I was abused by my mom. She was an alcoholic. I had experienced sexual abuse by three people by the time I was 10 years old. I moved 30 times in my life. I went to six different high schools. I went to four different elementary schools. And I say some of this because my recent diagnosis of ADHD is what I'm learning about it is that a lot of it's from trauma. A lot of people that have ADHD experienced a lot of trauma. And part of their DNA, their neurological makeup is about fight or flight. And so my entire life, I've just been fighting to survive and be safe and be happy and have joy in my life. I know that your listeners can't see it, but my coffee cup says Joy. That's my middle name. My mom gave me a hippie name, Melanie Joy Mark, which I hated when I was a kid. And, you know, as I grew up, I really embraced that. I really wanted to make my mark. When I was 19, I tried to kill myself. I was in the hospital after taking 75 pills to try to just end the pain. I just couldn't take it anymore. My life was just so full of trauma. My brother was killed in front of me. A semi-trailer ran over him in front of me by the P&E when I was 12 years old. My mom became a crackhead. You know, she was introduced to drugs. My brothers went into foster care. She was homeless on the streets of the downtown east side. You know, I spent my youth going downtown looking for her in SROs and the alleys, making sure that she was alive. When I did see her, she would just have so much shame that she was just a fuck up. That's what she'd tell me. She was just a fuck up. And then I became an advocate. I fought for my brothers to keep them out of foster care. They were going to be adopted. So I really tried to make sure that they had Christmases with me, birthdays with me. And so at a very young age, I was an advocate for my family. And I've always spoken up for myself. I've always had a lot of courage. I don't know why I have so much courage and tenacity. I've always worked hard. I've had a job since, you know, my first job was at Denny's. And I really have had a sense of self-determination, that sense of like work hard, play hard, live hard. And that really explains some of the ADHD. I have a lot of energy, and I've been misunderstood, I think, because of that. Because people think, like, I've been treated mostly for my entire life like something's wrong with me. And I'm like, actually, I'm actually really special. I survived all that shit. Like,
And so, so surviving all of that, I mean, this is when we hear David Eby and others say that you have the type of experience that needs to inform what people are doing at the legislature. Do you think the public service, who is charged often with dealing with these kinds of things, has the knowledge, the competencies to deal with some of these issues?
No, not at all. And I worked for the public service for many years. I worked with the RCMP, and I've worked in lots of colonial institutions for 27 years. And I worked as a Native court worker, a youth advocate with kids at Covenant House. And so that life experience that I just shared with you is empathy. I didn't read about this stuff. I literally lived that life of poverty, abuse, trauma, loss, grief, you name it. But I also had a lot of success, right? I went to school, I graduated, I struggled through all of those institutions despite all of those things, because I strongly believe in resiliency theory. It takes one person to believe in young people. I learned that at a young age through Dr. Martin Brokenleg, The Circle of Courage, which is about mastery, belonging, independence, and generosity, where you teach young people that you have those strengths. And so along my way, I've had amazing mentors. You know, Mary Ellen Terpel-Lafond, regardless of what people think of her, she was tenacious. And she fought for kids in care who were literally jumping out of hotel rooms because their lives weren't worth living anymore. I can relate to that. I can relate to being a kid who just wanted to give up. And I could relate to kids that were institutionalized and weren't seeing their family. And so I was a major threat to the public service before I became a politician, because I worked for 8 years as an advocate and I spoke up on behalf of people that didn't have a voice. And I remember when I first got elected, someone said to my aunt, who lives in Ladysmith, and she's like my mom, she said, "Melanie hates us." And my aunt goes, "What? What are you talking about?" She goes, "She's an advocate. Her job is to fight for kids." That was her job. I literally had a job to do to defend the rights of children. And I took that same tenacity and advocacy to the legislature the minute that I got there. And I did it based on something that I really want to emphasize. I went back to school. I studied criminology because I wanted to be a police officer. And then I worked with sexually exploited kids across this province. Across the country, kids that were being sold like baseball cards to the sex trade, children as young as babies being sexually exploited and raped, trafficked across this province. No one wants to talk about that. No one wants to talk about the horrific sex trade, billion-dollar sex trade in this country. And when we finished our report, Save the Children wrote a report, Sacred Lives. I was like 25 years old. And that report had recommendations for the government. And guess what? The government didn't do anything. And that really pissed me off, because I thought, we went and asked all these kids their truth about the horrors of their life. And I thought the government was going to do something about it. So I had amazing mentors like Senator Landon Pearson, who just passed away. And she was a fierce advocate for children's rights. And I learned a lot about the Convention on the Rights of Children. And I decided to go back to school and I studied political science because I wanted to understand the system. I wanted to understand, well, who makes the rules? How do rules and policies and laws get made? And that's what led me to work with Mary Ellen Terpel-Lafond for 8 years. I was in the system. I learned policies. I learned how to navigate my way through social workers all the way up to deputy ministers. And so the public service was afraid of me because I knew my stuff and I had a mandate to be an advocate for those kids. And I fought really hard. And I always had a line. I said, "Is it because you can't or you won't?" And that's what I meant in the legislature. The system is not willing to change. There's a resistance, right? There's this, "Oh, no, no, we can't do that." Why? I would always ask my whole life, why? Why can't we do that? And when I was in the legislature, I was just in the legislature 2 days ago with my last speech, and I went upstairs through the media door, and one of the persons told me, "You can't come through here." And I said, "Yes, I can. I'm an MLA." And I went to go take a picture of my family. She goes, you can't take a picture in here. I said, yeah, I can. And I'm not asking you. I'm taking a picture. It's my last day. And she goes, oh, I'm sorry. And I was like, no, I don't, we don't need to be treated that way. That type of control is a lot to do with my ODD, my oppositional defiance disorder, and my attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. There's a part of my brain that says, give me one good reason why I can't take a picture in the legislature. Mm-hmm. That's just dumb, right? It's the 21st century, and we've got these people running around controlling the people's house like it's 1823.
Yeah. I mean, right? And you're wearing sleeveless right now, which we weren't allowed to apparently for up until a couple of years ago.
Yeah. And you can see my tattoo. I mean, I have lots of blazers, but my tattoo says believe in the journey. And Jody Wickens and I, who got elected in 2016 in a by-election, got our tattoos together. And we're both advocates and we're both young. And it's people like us that I believe need to be in the legislature. And I firmly, unequivocally believe that Premier David Eby believes in that. I firmly, unequivocally believe that people like John Horgan believed in me and supported me to be an advocate. That's why he put me in cabinet. But the resistance that I faced within the public service was hard. I mean, the tuition waiver program that I created 6 weeks on the job. And, you know, for your listeners to understand, when you become a minister, you've got binders, you're learning about your mandate, you're meeting your staff. I went across the province and I visited all 25 public post-secondary institutions within 21 days. And I eliminated the fees for adult basic education that the Liberals imposed, which is just horrific to me. Criminal, actually. And then third, I created the tuition waiver program, but the public service said to me, oh, no, we have to do a review. It's going to take a year. And I said, no, it's not. Do it. And my sense, my belief that I'm the minister, it's my authority, it's my mandate. I firmly believe you do as I tell you to. Unless you're the minister, then, you know, I'm the elected person. I have the mandate from the people, from the premier. This is what you're going to do. And this goes back to, I'm not asking you, I'm telling you.
So let me ask you on that point, because you may have heard these rumors because, you know, off the top of this podcast, we're hearing you say, you can call me a bitch, just don't call me a stupid bitch. You may have heard these rumors that you were difficult to work for. Do you think you were a good boss? Do you think you were overly combative maybe with people?
I think for the record, I would say that I certainly made mistakes. And I can certainly tell you that over the course of my career, I climbed hard and fast in my role in leadership. I had lots of leadership roles. I had lots of responsibilities. I also had lots of training. I went to Queen's University. I did executive leadership training. And I tried to bring those ideas into the public service when I worked with the Representative for Children and Youth. And they resisted it. I tried to bring that into cabinet and caucus, and they resisted it. I swear to God to you that I pulled out my binders from Queens and said, hey, this is a way that you can build a team. This is the way that we can approach our meetings, blah, blah, blah. And there was a resistance. The other thing I would say is my ADHD is also, my brain works so fast. I described the Ferrari brain with bicycle brakes. I recognize now that I probably pushed people too hard. I probably pushed too fast to get things done with the expectation that they could paddle as hard as I could, right? And I know that some people were up for that challenge. I think there are some people that really were invigorated by it. They were inspired by it. And I can assure you, to this day, I have emails flooding into my office right now saying, thank you. Thank you for driving so hard. Thank you for pushing. Thank you for that change. And the people that had a hard time in my canoe, I'm not sorry, because I didn't have any intention to do harm. But the idea of being a bitch, the idea of being a bitch as a minister, as a leader, that's how women are characterized. When men demand things, they're leaders, they're the boss. When women demand things, we're bitches. And why I said in the media scrum, and I've made it very, very clear, you can call me a bitch, just don't ever call me a stupid bitch. Because the idea of how smart I am, how intelligent I am I wrong? Was I wrong in the things that I did as a minister? I don't want to say that I'm a know-it-all, because I don't know it all. I have a lot of humility. I know what I don't know, but I'm a very, very inquisitive person who has a huge appetite for learning. And I took my job as a minister very, very seriously. Fight for the people, deliver on your mandate, be an advocate. And the system is very used to coasting, right? They're used to just coasting along, doing their job to their standard, and they've never had to work with, and that's technically the fact. The public service has never had to work with someone like myself, a First Nations woman who had the power and the expertise and the mandate to be the boss. And that is intimidating and threatening to people. And I can assure you, and I don't say this with any animosity, but people poked holes in my canoe all along the way. And that idea of, like, why do we have to report to Minister Mark about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls? It's not her mandate. I said, well, they're all the women dying in my riding. And I know people that worked in the public service who told me the reputation that I had, that I was difficult to work with, blah, blah, blah. And I say blah, 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 because at the end of the day, those people have to take their fragility and ask themselves, why is it that Melanie Mark, a First Nations woman, fought so hard for her people? Well, let's pause for a second. Indigenous women and girls all across this country are being murdered and have gone missing. And I want the listeners to really think about that. You know, think about your daughter being brutalized and the violence that the media does not cover. I just talked to my mentor, Bernie Williams, who saved a girl who was gangbanged by three Latino guys with a gun in her vagina. And she did not have enough faith in the system to go to the hospital because she did not feel that the system was going to protect her. Mary Ellen Trapella-Fond wrote about the healthcare system and how it doesn't protect us. So this is what I mean by systems failure. These are children. One mother at the Missing Women's March said that her daughter was in the morgue for 3 weeks. And the police kept telling her that they were doing their level best to find her. Well, they didn't. She was in the morgue for 3 weeks. Imagine, I don't know if you're a mother, but I want all the mothers and the fathers and the parents and extended family to think about that. Imagine 3 weeks of looking for your daughter who's dead, who's been brutalized, and it's in the morgue. I mean, that is... We need to start exposing the truth of what's happening to people in our country, and they're Indigenous. And I'm going to damn right be outspoken about it because I'm Indigenous. My life's at risk. My daughter's life's at risk. We are targeted for a reason. Picton didn't happen too long ago. Inquiry after inquiry about what happens to Indigenous people. And I said it when we did the Women's March. And it's very provocative. I get that people will be like, oh God, here she goes again. I said, if you want to get away with murder, kill an Indian.
Yeah.
Because in our society, where's the justice?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the justice? There are people are over-incarcerated. They're in the foster care system. They're being murdered. And the people that work within the system, in my opinion, need to do a better job to carry out their mandate to protect our people. That's what they get paid to do. Taxpayers mm-hmm. pay these people to protect us. And again, all of these truths might be hard, but I would ask your listeners, if I'm lying, call me out. All those armchair quarterbacks, I said on my Twitter account yesterday, I was like, fuck off. And that's not angry Melanie. Mm-hmm. It is the truth. If I'm lying, call me out. But that's where we call it the truth and reconciliation calls to action. We need to start getting out of our comfort zone and recognizing that this country exists on the backs of stealing Native people's land, breaking our families, institutionalizing us. And I'm one generation away from that. So we've got a lot of work to do in this country, and people need to stop being so ignorant and stop being so sensitive about how their feelings are.
I think
I'll just say one thing. If my words hurt, imagine what it's like to physically be on the hands of that violence or that verbal abuse or whatever, right? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, exactly on the same point. And like, you know, the phrase, when you talked about old white men seemed to hurt a lot of feelings. And yes, imagine if you're actually dealing with the violence. Not only that, I mean, you also represent the Downtown East Side in your riding. That has got to take a toll on you. You've been through so much yourself that I think a lot of people may have forgotten and said, oh, well, she's a cabinet minister, so like how hard was her life really? But I think you've explained it very well. And a lot of people are saying that these are the types of experiences we need informing policy, because the legislature doesn't look like the rest of the province. The public service doesn't look like the rest of the province.
Totally. And the thing that I would also emphasize is I would say I'm a threat, right? My pronouns, I think someone sent me a text that said, what are my pronouns? Threat. Try me, right? My courage comes from visceral experiences, advocacy. People have called on me and said, Melanie, I'm telling you all of my trauma so you can fight for me. And that's what I've been doing my whole life. 27 years fighting professionally, my whole life fighting for myself and my family personally. And I'm also trained. I mean, that's what the listeners need to understand. I used to drive an RCMP car. I got trained at depot in Regina for a month. I know how to shoot a gun. I know how to arrest people. I've been a court worker. I'm trained. I've got a criminology diploma. I've got a child rights diploma certificate, you know, so I don't come at this job as though I'm just throwing anger. I'm actually technically trained in what I do. And I think that's what makes it even harder for people, right? Mm-hmm. That it's easy, that it goes back to the stupid bitch. You can call me a bitch, but I know what I'm talking about. I know what the laws are. I know what the policies are. And we as a society need to do better. We need to up our game. We need to start really looking in our backyard and really asking ourselves if we're really living in a humanitarian society, if we're really, you know, demanding the best of ourselves. And when we think about the Downtown East Side, I had one advocate screaming at me. I was downtown with my mom when the tent cities were down there this summer, and I was accused on social media of being the minister in Parksville, playing around the province, ignoring my community, while there's all these tent cities happening. And I know that our government has been doing a lot, right, to help with harm reduction, housing, supportive housing, drop-in centers, increasing welfare rates. Like, I can go on and on about what we've been trying to do to reverse the really damaging decisions that the BC Liberals did to our social service sector. I mean, they gutted the system. And I mean, if you want to talk politics about mm-hmm. why I got into politics, it's because the Liberals were nasty at turning their backs on people, turning their backs on kids, vulnerable people. And so I'm in the Downtown East Side with my mom. I want to walk the streets just discreetly to see for myself what's going on in the streets. And a woman, I won't name the organization, but when we finished walking, it was my daughter's birthday, August 13th, and we're driving away, my mom, myself, and my dog. And she sees me at the red light across from Pigeon Park, and she goes, is that Melanie Mark? Get out of your fucking car. Where are you? Why aren't you here with the people? You fucking turned your back on the people. And she starts screaming at me. And I was, she's like, get out of your car right now. So I get out of my car. My mom's like, oh my God, oh my God. My mom's like a little bit of a chicken heart. She's like, no, Melanie, no. And I said, no way. I said, I will never turn my back on the community. So I get out, they start videotaping me, screaming at me that I've turned my back on the people, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, I came down here to see what's going on. Like, this is my community, blah, blah, blah. And she starts screaming that I have a Tesla and that, you know, look at me with my Tesla. And my mom goes, she worked hard for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so my point here is that I will never turn my back in the community. I was there for the community as a volunteer. I was there when I was, before I was a mother, after being a mother, after being a minister. I'll always be there for the downturning side. I told the premier I will do anything I can to help get an amazing advocate to take my spot in the legislature. And it's my community, right? So I'll be there for my community. But the other piece I won't be is I'm not going to be apologetic because I drive an electric car. I'm not going to be apologetic about being successful. I think there's this narrative that natives aren't allowed to be successful. We're not allowed to have the things that everyone else in society has. And again, that might be quote unquote politically incorrect, but I've had my share of poverty and I've worked since I was 13 years old, paying taxes, doing my part in society. And that's what I was asking the media to do, was tell more positive stories about natives that are doing great things in this province, because we are making a difference despite all of the conditions that we've lived with to crush us. We're crushing it. Some of us are crushing it and doing great things. And that's what gives me my power, right? My power comes from the fact that if I'm lying, call me out. But this is the truth. Mm-hmm. The truth is, we, despite Indian residential schools and people trying to literally kill the Indian and the child, and people are always, you know, we all grieve, Canadians feel, oh, sad, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. Great, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Do something. Don't feel sorry. Don't be an armchair quarterback. Don't sit there watching the news feeling bad. Do something.
Yeah, and that was like when I heard you talk about your criticism of the media and things, that's where I thought, you know what, I'm not going to feel like wonder if you were talking about me. But what I wanted to do was step back and say, well, how do I, as part of this mechanism, make sure that I'm not, you know, jumping on a bandwagon, making sure that I'm not, you know, mischaracterizing something. So I think that's something that I take to heart.
Bendra, I just wanted to leave you with this. This is what you're doing is really important. Part of Paddle Together is about allyship. Part of Paddle Together is about people working in unison, right? That's what I meant when I said, you know, John Lennon's song, imagine all the people living in harmony. That's where I want to go with the rest of my career. I want to just get more people engaged and more people involved and more people empowered to be able to use their voice, not my voice. I know that I take up space, but the more people that use their voice and their power to be an ally to make a difference, we're going to get there. But I just reject people poking holes in my canoe. That's all. I just will not tolerate anymore of people holding me back. And politics was really awesome. It was really invigorating, but it was very hard for me to keep my mouth shut.
My thanks to Melanie Mark for making the time for this conversation and to you for listening. If you have any comments about this episode, or if you want to send me a recipe for a smoothie that doesn't include strawberries, you can hit me up at ladyattheledge@gmail.com. That's ladyattheledge@gmail.com. Until next time, bye.